Hello, dear friends, and welcome to the Great Day Podcast. I'm your friend and host, Mayor Kane. And today we have another Great Day Podcast episode for you with Aaron Gross and Aaron Yogoda from Streitz Matzah. Now, before we jump into this incredible and interesting podcast episode, I do want to give a shout out to Streitz Matzah. Yep. With Pesach around the corner, these guys showing up, supporting the podcast, greatly appreciate it. Streitz Matzah is America's last family-owned matzah bakery. They're the only ones to produce here in the United States, guaranteeing freshness and quality of all their products. And this Passover, the Streitz way is the right way. Stock up on items through the website at www.streitzmatzos.com. That's streitzmatzos.com. Use code Mayor K. That's right. That's me. Woo-woo. For 10% off your order. Also, enter for a chance to win products from Streitz by tagging at Streitz Matzos in your food photos and videos. It could be artwork, recipes, songs. Get creative. You name it. Tag them on social media at Streitz Matzos. Thank you so much for the support. So without further ado, let's jump into all the ins and outs of creating matzah and all the incredible products with Aaron and Aaron right here, right now. All right, so this podcast here, we have something really fun for you all because with Passover just a couple of weeks away, we have two gentlemen who are steeped within the tradition of Passover. They literally make matzah for this is what they do, like for generations. So we have with us on the podcast today, Aaron Yogoda and Aaron Gross from Streitz Matzah. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good, thank you. Thanks for having us. You're doing
great. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, what's in your closet? I mean, is your pantry just filled with matzah? Is it just with Streitz products? Like, are your kids always trying to beg you, like, hey, can we try something else? Or is it just Streitz all the way every day?
I actually have matzah in my house, and that kids actually eat it without me making them eat it, which, you know, kind of shocks in this day and age. Yeah, it's a good sign to have.
My pantry's full.
That's amazing. I'm curious to know, like, how do you guys even choose? Because, I mean, we're going to delve into matzah, how it's made, all the beautiful things about it. But, like, I know you do other types of products as well, like macaroons and soup mixes. How do you even decide, like, where to go about and expand when it comes to other products? Like, is this stuff that you just need a one? Or is there a demand that you do research on, like, yo, this is something that we should start creating?
We can get kind of creative for Passover, you know. But Passover matzah, there are a lot of limitations. It's flour and water. You can change the different types of flour, but you're kind of restricted when you're baking for Passover. But during the year, you know, we have people eating matzah the other 51 weeks of the year that aren't eating it for Passover as a Passover requirement. They're eating it because they like it as a bread or a bagel alternative. And that's where we get a lot more creative. You know, we have 11 different flavors of matzah for during the year. And we're trying to constantly come out and follow, you know, basic trends in the grocery store to try to figure out what the consumer is looking for.
We also want people to think that matzah is also a healthy alternative to bread and to put things on. Like a Carr's water biscuit is just basically a small little matzah. They just did a better job of marketing.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, Streitz Matzah, people are tuning in. And, you know, it's been around for years and years, decades. Take me back to, like, how is it that you, I mean, you're in the family business, which is so unusual to, like, for have a family business running for so many years. But tell me, did you have to be convinced to join the family business? Was this something that, you know, when you turned bar mitzvah, you knew, like, hey, this is what I want to do when I grow up? Was this a choice that it was given to you, or was it something that you're, like, told that this is what's going to be for your future?
No, we really didn't talk about it growing up much. My grandfather was in his early 80s and he wasn't feeling well after I graduated college. He told me to come for a few weeks and I've been here on a temporary basis 30 years later.
I started in a similar way. I was actually living in the city. I was working out at the racetrack out in Long Island, working out there in the mornings. And then I started just moonlighting in the evenings in the factory. And then I just kind of started working in sales and kind of went that direction. And I've been here since the late 90s.
Crazy. So, I mean, with matzah, like, how does one, like, stay, like, what do you think the secret sauce is when it comes to Streitz? Not literally when it comes to, like, the ingredients yet, but, like, what is it about the company and how it's operated that it's able to stand the tests of time throughout the generations?
Well, we're the last ones left in America. You know, years ago, there were four major brands with Horowitz, Margaret, and Manischewitz, Streitz, and Goodman's. And we're the I guess the last of the Mohicans still standing in this country where everyone else is importing from Israel. We decided to build a new factory up here in Orangeburg when we sold our property in Rivington Street. And we're just trying to keep the tradition alive.
Yeah, just to go back a little bit, we started on Pitt Street on the Lower East Side in 1914 or 1916. And it was Aaron Streit and Rabbi Weinberg. And they started a little hand bakery on Pitt, which is basically two or three blocks from where we were up until 2015. And they were there. And then in 1925, Aaron Streit with his son, Irving, Jack was a lot younger at the time.
17.
Son Irving, they built the modern factory, which we stayed there until 2015. So we were there 90 years, right? And in this place in the Lower East Side. And we were there to service that neighborhood. You know, that's where the large Jewish population was in the United States. And we built that factory for the Lower East Side. We had a retail presence. There used to be lines around the block for Streit's Matzah because Manischewitz was out in Cincinnati. Horowitz Margaretin, I think, was in Long Island City. And I don't know where Goodman's was. But we were the Lower East Side Matzah. And then we stayed there, you know, and we still had that retail store up until the day we left. You know, but in 2014-15, we would have two people coming in the store. We had no lines around the block anymore. We didn't have that retail presence. So we were baking in Manhattan for national distribution, which didn't make very much sense.
Right. It was very gentrified. As the Lower East Side became more gentrified, it was harder and harder to do business down there. We were in four old converted tenement buildings that were five stories, four stories, and a six-story building. It was playing like chutes and ladders, our factory. Plus, we had no loading zone, and 53-foot trailers couldn't get down the block to pick up product. Every day, we were wiping out people's side-view mirrors, so it became a real hassle to do business in Manhattan.
Yeah, it sounds so crazy even to think that you stayed for that long. What was like the straw that broke the camel's back that you're like, okay, this is it. Like what happened in 2014, 2015 that you're like, okay, this is it. We're selling out. We're going to not selling out, but selling, we're moving to upstate to like relocate and to grow bigger and better.
The good thing about being I'm fifth generation, Aaron's fourth, being a fifth generation family business, we have a decent amount of shareholders that are all family members. So getting everyone on the same page to make that move probably took us 20 years.
Oh,
15, 20 years. It was okay. The real estate was appreciating at the time, and we were making a great product. Or the biggest reason we really had to move is we were at capacity. You know, we were baking around the clock. We couldn't physically bake any more product. And if we want to grow and we want to be a bigger presence in the kosher market, we needed to expand the facility. So we were at capacity. We were making a great product, but we had no room for growth. And that was the final straw, basically, that got the family to actually move and say, hey, let's reinvest in a modern facility up in Orangeburg, New York. We're in Rockland County. So we went from the Lower East Side, which was the Jewish capital of America, to Rockland County, which I think per capita is a very large Jewish demographic. We pull a lot of our labor force from the area. The goal is to maybe have a small retail presence like we did on Lower East Side, but also to bring in and bring tours, bring school groups through, bring people through this place. We have a little museum that we're putting in of our old facility, all the old machinery and everything. So that's the longer term goal. But the biggest thing right now is creating the same taste, texture of the product that we had on Rivington Street, which we have done. We copied everything from the mixing room to a tea, to the sheeting process of the dough, and to the oven. We profiled the oven exactly because we're the only matzah that we bake with a convection oven. We overlap the dough prior to sheeting, so we create air pockets, make it more crispy. Mm-hmm. And we have a mixing process that's very different from everyone else. So we've recreated it, and now we're on a lot larger scale, and we have a lot of capacity.
We even stuck with the same oven manufacturer. When we took the old oven apart, we couldn't take it with us because it was basically holding the building together.
Right.
It was Baker Perkins. Oh, wow. We moved out here and we got a lot of different quotes. At the end, we went with Baker Perkins so that we could try to copy exactly what we hired an engineer who worked for PepsiCo to copy what we were doing there. So we replicated what we were doing in Rivington Street here. We needed, you know, we got water from New York, and like my cousin said, the whole process was the same.
I mean, that's so interesting because it comes down to the details, like even the water from New York, water from Jersey, water from Chicago, it's all different types of water, and that will affect how the matzah is created. What's something that you would say most people do not know that goes into creating matzah? Something that they wouldn't think about, but there's a certain detail or a certain, you know, element that is needed, or some sort of fun fact that needs, the process needs to be taken seriously, that will bring out a really great product.
Right. I mean, there's no hidden ingredients. It's flour and water. It's in the Bible. It's
right. So it's like, it's so.
Right. But it's the combination of doing the flour and water. Like my grandfather used to say, if you do it wrong, you get paste, you know, but we do have precaution, you know, different things we have to step, hoops we have to go through for Passover that we don't need for the rest of the year.
Like Mayim Shlena. So the water, right? You can't take water straight from the tap and mix it in the mixing room. It has to sit overnight in a holding tank. And then use the next day. So we have two holding tanks, one for each day. We let it sit. And then in the mixing process, from the time when the water and flour first touch, it has to be out of the oven within 18 minutes, right? So it needs to be mixed, it needs to be sheeted, and it needs to be baked on the other side of the oven, cooling it within 18 minutes. That's not just the lead edge of the dough. It's that whole batch of dough. So it's a huge timing restrictions involved in it. And then there's this oversight, there's rabbinic oversight that is making sure throughout the whole process, you're not messing up anywhere. Or else we would just be a large cracker, right? Without that oversight, without those restrictions, there would be no,
maybe a big saltine.
Yeah. Be a large saltine.
Even the flour is supervised for the milling for Passover flour is milled. Right. So, you know, it comes here, it's in a sealed truck. The rabbis have to break the seal, you know, which was a problem also in around 2001. I mean, this year we're going to, it's the anniversary of 9/11. After that happened, we were getting flour from, you know, Pennsylvania, and every day it was getting stopped at the bridge by the police when they were checking. Here comes a big thing of flour, which is very explosive, and they were breaking the seals, and then the rabbis wouldn't accept it when it got to the factory. So for a few months there, we had to redo everything at Streit's just to get back when we were on Rivington Street after 9/11. You know, wow. So big learning curve all the time.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. I mean, now, so take us through, if you don't mind, what goes through the process? You know, flour arrives, the water arrives. For someone who's like listening in, like what's that look like when those ingredients come to the factory?
We're taking in about 55,000 pounds of flour per 55, truck.
55,000. Wow. Okay.
So
yeah.
And we do a trailer a day. So every morning around 6:30, the trailer arrives, the rabbi meets him outside, cuts the seal, and it gets blown pneumatically into the building. We have interior silos inside. And then once the flour arrives in the morning, we've already started mixing the mixing process from a different silo. But the flour gets called up to the mixing room in about 200 pound batches, depending on the outside humidity, or actually the humidity in the mixing room. We regulate the water anywhere from 75 to 80 pounds of water.
And that's water that was from the day before that had to sit overnight for the Mayim Shlena.
Right. So it's about, say, 200 pounds and 80 pounds. That's our secret recipe. And then the mixing process is 2.5 to 3 minutes. Sheeting process is about 6 minutes, and it cooks for about a minute and a half at 740 degrees.
Wow.
So the biggest thing we're doing as well in the sheeting process is we're overlapping the dough. We're creating air pockets between all these layers and layers and layers of dough. And then we send it through these rollers that knock it down and make it thinner and thinner and thinner till it's the thickness of the correct thickness of matzah. Then we put the stipples in it, the little dots in it. Otherwise, it would blow up like a flatbread or like a lavash. So we put those little dots in it. Then we cut it in sixes and then cut it long ways and then cut it the other way.
It goes into the oven in rows of six pre-individual. Where in the old, in Rivington Street, it would come out in big blocks of eight, and then we'd have to break it by hand. But now it's going in as individual pieces.
Oh yeah, because I saw that. I saw how that used to come out in the old factory. I checked out the documentary Streit's Matzah and the American Dream. A really interesting documentary, which I spotted one of my friends who was one of the rabbis on in the actual documentary, which was pretty cool to see. Yeah, Beryl Hahn. Shout out to Beryl. And so that was really, I mean, really interesting. I do suggest that if anybody who's interested to learn more, to do check out the documentary, which can be found, I believe, on Amazon Prime. It was really cool to see those, which I feel like B&H may have stolen the idea from you, know how they have these, the baskets that fly around the store, like seeing those baskets in your old factory with all the matzah and how they would maneuver from room to room was really cool and really fascinating. Is that, Is that still implemented in the new factory or not?
It's not. The baskets were amazing. That was Aaron Streit back in the 20s.
So smart. Genius.
Right? And they served two purposes. We were in tenement buildings. So the oven, we had an oven on the third floor. We had an oven on the first floor. All the packaging was on the second floor. How are you going to get the matzah to the second floor? We had a basket system that came out of the oven. It was broken into, they made 15 sheets, 15 large sheets. And then they broke them into eight bundles of matzah and stuffed them in the baskets. And then the baskets took about 20 minutes just to get to the packaging area. So it got them there. And then it also gave it time to cool before it went in a box. It was ingenious.
So smart.
What he did back in
the 20s. We kept the baskets. We're not using them, but we have them here.
We have a big cooling tunnel that it goes through. And then we have a robotic picking.
Wow.
So we basically went from the most antiquated factory in the world to the most modern in a year and a half.
But most of the modernization came from after it comes out of the oven with the robots and stuff like that, where the beginning process is basically still the same, just in a larger scale.
What do you miss most from the old factory? What do you think it's missing?
I miss the place all the time. It was easy. You know, it was just easy to fix something. It was a problem. It was a gear. It was a chain. Aaron always says, my cousin always says, if you can fix a bike, you can fix anything there. I mean, that's a little, you know, generalization, but it's kind of true. Here, you think something goes down. It's a computer chip. It's something in the air system. It's something, you know, very complex, and you could be down for a couple of days trying to find it, troubleshooting it. There it was simple yet ingenious.
It was a unique place. It was kind of different. We were doing something different in New York City. It attracted a lot of famous people to come by. You know, they shot some movies there, some TV shows there. And I guess till after we left, we realized what we had there. It was different. We were making a factory in Manhattan. We were like a throwback in time. As the neighborhood changed, we were still doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I was reading a lot of articles, and that's, you know, is there so much nostalgia, so much history that you guys were one of the last, you know, fortitudes and landmarks of what, you know, the old neighborhood was like. And, I learned a lot about that through that documentary. I'm curious to know though, what goes on with the matzah that doesn't make it within the 18 minutes? What happens? What happens to that?
If there's a breakdown or there's something that interrupts the process, you have to implement a hard clean, which basically takes about an hour, hour and a half to clean all the belts and start all over as if you're starting all over for the day. So it's an issue. It's a problem.
We don't have that issue at Passover time. During the regular year, we don't have that time restriction.
Right.
So, but we don't have any home for that matzah for Passover that doesn't make it in the 18 minutes. We shut down as quickly as possible. We throw that out. We throw whatever dough is out on the sheeter, do that hard clean, and then start over.
Got that. So do you feel like the matzah throughout the year is different from the ones that you create for Passover? Like, is there something that's different? Do you stick to the 18 minutes throughout the year still?
No. No. During the year, we do take challah and they make a blessing on it, but we add malt, we add canola oil. Some of them have olive oil, sun-dried tomato, basil, garlic, salt, onion, poppy, all different flavors. So we can get a lot more creative.
It's basically like the matzah version of a bagel store during the rest of the year. We have all different flavors.
Right.
Right. So we can get a lot more creative. And listen, the people that are eating it during the year are eating it because they like it, right? They're eating it. We do. There is a sense of nostalgia. People want what they want on Passover. They want that pink box. They want what their grandparents had. They want to have that memory that they had on their Seder table. But during the year, you're dealing with even a more, you know, a particular customer. It's something they're eating for, whether it's a snack during the day or eating for breakfast. They know what they like, and
there's more choice in that manner.
They like it because they want it. They're buying it because they want it, not because they have to. They're putting on a Seder,
right?
So that customer is more demanding, and that's you know, what we're really trying to make sure that we're giving them a quality product.
And that customer is the everyday matzah eater, or the weekly matzah eater. They know when there's a little difference in the box. They'll write a letter. You know, the other people that eat matzah just for the Seder, they, you know, they have 364 days till the next Seder, so they don't really remember
What kind of feedback are you getting back on your matzah?
When we moved, right? So we had a down year where we had to outsource. for about a year and a half, we had to outsource the production. We're like, okay, it'll be okay. We got hate mail. You wow. guys ruined what your grandparents have done. Oh. You guys messed up a great thing.
Our tagline is a taste of a memory. We got, this isn't the memory I remember. This is not the taste I remember.
Yeah, ouch. Ouch.
Yeah, and we basically said, listen, we're in a transition year. We thank you for your feedback. We'll send you the first box when we start up the new factory. And it was lightly salted matzo, which we started with. We sent everyone out. We tried to keep all the as many people as possible that gave us a return address or a return email. But we were getting it. We were shocked.
I guess it comes from a place of where you're so connected to the right. brand and who you were, and like they felt like a certain loss in that regard. But it seems like you guys were able to bounce back. And was there a certain fear around shutting down the factory, or as you moved to not be around for a season?
It was a huge fear. We didn't build one factory and then shut down on a Friday and open up the other factory on a Monday. We came here. There was nothing here. We started from scratch, and there were a couple of times, you know, we had an oven fire the first week. And wow. I mean, there was a couple of times that we were very nervous that wasn't going to make it.
And we were nervous that we weren't going to get product from our supplier. You know, our supplier was our competitor. They said, basically, you know what, we can maybe just not give him something for a year. But we had a good contract with them. We had a good working relationship. Everything worked out.
And we helped them when they moved, but that didn't mean they were going to reciprocate.
Right? Yeah.
Business. They did.
So we got everything we needed. It worked out. And interesting enough, when we were getting this mail from people, we got a lot more mail on the daily matzah. The Passover matzah, there were complaints. There were plenty of complaints. But I would say 75% of the complaints were the daily matzah eater. Like I said, the eater that's eating it by choice, that knows what they like or eating it for a reason. Those are the people that were really upset with that interim year.
Mm. We called people directly. We wrote everybody a letter. I mean, today, you know, if a rebate check comes out, I still sign the check old school. And, you know, that was one of the first things I did was started reading complaint letters. And we still read them ourselves here today. We never pass that off to anyone.
But we also get some nice letters too. People, some complimentary ones, which are always great to get.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's always great, but it's always there's always that one letter that sticks out. That's like a little negative, like, man, like all the other ones sort of faulted it for it.
We get lots of letters like, you know, this brings back a memory of how I ate this with my grandparents, and my parents are not here now. And I just want to keep the tradition. Thank you guys for doing that. And a lot of it came from watching the documentary that brought back a lot of people to write letters just to say, hey, we really enjoy it. We're glad that you're a family business, which we get a lot of press for being a fifth and fourth family business. Besides right. what our business is, you know, not a lot of family businesses get to this generation without some kind of internal fighting or murder or something. And we don't have any of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you did mention how like a lot of the family members are part of the board members and shareholders. So I'm just curious to know what's like, you know, Passover in your house, or what's any family reunion like when it comes to when the family gets together?
It's actually, we get along pretty good. Actually, on Aaron's side of the family, because we're cousins on opposite side of his family, all of his relatives were married to to different matzah people at the time.
Yeah, my grandfather, Aaron Streit, who I'm named for, was married to Muriel. Aaron Gross was married to Muriel Streit. But he had two older brothers. One was married to Manashevitz girl, and one was married to a Horowitz Margaretin girl.
No way.
The humans were all boys, so there was no one to marry off. But I'm sure at those seders, there were, you know.
Everyone had their own brand in front of them.
Yeah, they bring your own matzah.
Got a little contentious at the seders. But our seders are, you know, our family reunions and everything, it's great. We talk business usually for the first couple minutes, and then it's whatever, off to normal things, the important stuff. But everyone really seriously does get along. We're all pulling in the same direction, and we're just trying to make this work. And it is an honor to do what we're doing, and to be the last, I think, is special. You know, two factories are basically putting out all the other brands of matzah coming out of Israel, primarily. Mm-hmm. And then it's just Streit's making Streit's. So all these other brands, you think you have all this choice. It's really just coming out of two different places with different going in different boxes.
So we also get a lot of play from the Made in the USA as well.
Right.
So that's interesting. I mean, so that it's a good pivot, because I am still curious to know, there are these other boxes. You go to the shelf, you'll see other matzahs there. And like you mentioned, it's water and flour when it comes to Passover. There's not any right. secret ingredient. So what is someone to expect, and how does one differ and continue to create a brand and a strong name, for that matter, to say, hey, this is this experience, this taste will be different when everybody's sort of using the same thing, the same ingredients?
the sheeting, the mixing, and the baking process, right? The fewer ingredients, the more complex it can be.
It doesn't sound that way, but it is. The less ingredients, the harder it is.
You don't have as much to hide behind, right? You can't put a little more butter here, a little more oil there, and get around something. So that flour to water ratio is extremely important. When we go off by 2 pounds in a 300-pound mix, it can mess up the whole mix. So it does change a lot. I'm saying the humidity in the room changes the batch. But I really think it's our mixing process. We use a lot more water in our mix than everyone else. Everyone else has a lot drier mix. And it's the sheeting process, creating a more crispy, less dense, less doughy product. It's crispier.
We're crunchier. Yeah. Ours is a little more crunchy and a little darker.
Right. Crunchier product. And then the oven, where everyone else uses direct fire oven. So they're actually rolling the matzo over the fire and cooking it that way. So they're only really cooking one side. We have a convection oven. We're blowing the heat in. We cook both sides fairly evenly. And I think we create a fantastic product, a way better product. Yeah. We're fresh. So we're baking Passover matzah now. Everything else coming in, everything else on the shelf is all coming from overseas. That's a month transit right there. And they're baking it over the previous summer for this Passover. So you're talking 6-7 months. It's sitting there on a container ship.
Right. You know. So you're actually starting to bake that now. That is also.
Well, we have been baking for a while, but we still are baking now. Stuff shipping out Monday, you know.
How many pounds a year are you guys shipping out when it comes to matzo?
I have to do some math on that one. we're doing about 50,000 pounds a day.
Wow.
Right. Call it 5 days a week.
So matzo and matzo derivative product.
So you can do the math.
Okay.
That's
a lot. My brain started hurting. Okay. That's really good. That's really good. So
I would say 10 million pounds.
Wow.
Of matzah derivatives, matzah meal, cake meal, farfel, all that stuff.
Wow. That's tremendous. I mean, so this generation, I mean, the generations have been coming and going when it comes to the Shrites. To adapt to this younger generation, this new generation, you know, we're talking about millennials, Generation Z, where people are, you know, have their own challenges when it comes to tradition and their own history and what they want and what's important to them. How do you make matzah, for lack of a better word, sexy? How do you make it hot? How do you make
We get on these Mayor Kay podcasts.
All right. That's anyway. Cool. I like it. It's innovative. It's fresh.
Generation. Right. That's what it is. We need to get our story out and need to say why we're different. Is it going to be a sexy product for Passover? The Passover, it's a necessity. We just want to make it the best necessity out there, the highest quality. And then during the year, there needs to be some things that we need to work on. I think following health trends, I think is very important. We do an organic matzah for Passover and for daily. Some gluten-free options that aren't just like, you know, potato starch and stuff like that, but just some quinoa flours and some more unique flour options, I think it is a good way to get out there more mainstream. Mm-hmm. But if you can come up with some ideas on how to make it sexy, we're listening.
Yeah, we maybe go towards the artesian type of, you know, trying to go for those ancient grains or something like that and be a little different.
Nice. Is there a place that Shrites that's not being shipped yet that you wanted to? How could you expand more? What are the future plans for Shrites?
We have a lot of room for expansion. So we, you know, like I said, we were at capacity for many, many years.
Yeah.
We never were in Costco, right? So we never really went after a customer like Costco because it is more of a bid, and we just didn't have the capacity. So we were expanding there. We have a lot of expansion capacity to expand in the United States, but also even back to Israel. Right. So there are close to a million American Jews living in Israel that maybe grew up on Shrites, you know, grew up on Long Island and moved to Israel. They know the brand. So there's a lot of brand equity, and we don't really have anything to speak of selling back into Israel. Israel's all coming over here, selling here. We're going to start selling back there. And most exports, we do a lot of business in Canada. Other than that, it's minimal. There are Jews all around the world celebrating Passover. And then there are people all around the world that are looking for a lower carb bagel bread alternative. And that's a whole different story.
Got that. How do you guys like your matzah? Do you like it overly burnt? Do you like it?
I'm more on the burnt side.
I'm more on the burnt side.
And Shrites is always going to be a little darker.
I like the saltier stuff.
Yeah. It's a healthy guy. Well, yeah, I just put nice burnt matzo with butter. That's it. Nice and simple.
Boom.
I could eat it every day for lunch, and I do most days because it's easy, because it is right here.
Do you think Streitz will move into the there's different styles, right? This is machine made matzah, and there's also like handmade matzah. Do you think Streitz will have like everything about moving into a place where like you have this, you know, niche market where you tap into, which is all handmade?
We have talked about it, doing it here, putting an area, because we do have the capacity to purchase the flour. There's a lot of economies of scale that we can put a little hand bakery in. There definitely is a call for it. It's not something we're concentrating on. It is our roots. It's what we began doing, right, in 1914. So it's something we're thinking of. It would be just for the Passover season, just do a little hand bakery and get out some extra matzah.
Yeah, I figure because there is a whole like market of Jews who want specifically just that, which could be
Especially for the Seder, yes.
For the Seder, 100%.
We've tooled around the idea of doing machine round as well. So round matzahs, basically the same size of what we have now, but make them round. Seder matzahs, that's an idea. But like you said before, a shmura hand matzah is something that we're interested in. It's just, listen, we the last couple of years, honestly, we've been trying to just strengthen our core and make sure we're as efficient and have the quality that we want coming out of this place. And we're there. So now it's time to get creative.
Last year was the first year that we really felt comfortable making the matzah here again. So it was a lot slower learning curve than we thought it would be.
What were some of those challenges? Because I feel like, you know, you have all that history, all that experience. It's a new place, of course. But what kind of challenges came up for you that sort of slowed down that process? And were there any times where you just were like, maybe it was a good run? You know what? It's a good run. Let's take the money. Let's go. Let's invest in something else. Why not?
Maybe blew up the new oven like, what was it, the second day of baking? Somebody hit a switch and poof.
Yeah, we blew the top off the oven a couple of days into it.
Wow.
And the day I cried.
We were already having a very difficult time getting up and running. We couldn't get the matzah flat for the longest time.
Wow.
We just couldn't get the moisture levels right.
Who do you bring in for that? Like, is there some sort of masa doctor that comes in? It's like,
trial and error. And then I kept a bunch of matzah from Rivington Street, which I still have a couple pallets actually, which can't eat it now, but I take it out every once in a while just to look at it, for color and stuff like that. But when we blew up the oven, it was terrible. But there were a couple of times when, it was like, why did we do this? But we were already in. So like you said, take the money and run. The money was already spent. So there was no take the money and run. It would be take the loss and run, right? So we were already in. We bought this building. We bought all this, you know, millions of dollars worth of equipment. We were in. We were in it. And it was a lot of sleepless nights. Yeah. But we got through it.
And we also, nobody makes matzah equipment. They would make, you know, they'd make a sale once every 200 years. So a lot of stuff had to be retrofitted until we got it, you know, working. Like the robots, they would go crazy and just start throwing matzah everywhere. And, you know, everything had to be retrofitted, and all the machines came from different places. So to get the machines all to really talk to one another and understand what was going on, that was a big headache. You know, we get the matzah flat one day, but then the robots were throwing it around the next day. And it was very difficult.
One of the things that made it very difficult as well is we made a conscious effort to retain everybody and anybody that was working in the old facility to work in this facility. You know, we had guys working 30, 40 years. They wanted to make the move. They had a spot here, which is great. But a lot of them, we'd be doing something. They'd be like, oh, your grandfather didn't do it that way. I said, I know that, but it's a totally different machine. It's a computer now. You know, we have a guy that writes it in his book every day. And I'm like, you don't need to write your book. You have it on the computer screen.
Right.
But he's been here 35 years. So he writes it.
He knows how to do it. So we had a lot of people with great experience, which we wanted them there, because we wanted them to touch the dough, to feel the matzah, to taste the matzah, to make sure that's what it is. But when you're trying to teach them to work with new modern equipment, it was difficult. It was difficult for all of us.
It's also one, the oven's a lot longer now, and the mixing is a lot, you know, the batches are a much bigger batch. So that also took a lot of, you know, the guys like, no, we put 50 pounds of water in. Well, not now, we can't put 50 pounds of water in, you know, so that was also a big
learning. Right.
We had a lot of opinions, which were, we valued a lot, and it was a pain in the ass a lot of times as well.
Right. So when it comes down to it, when it comes to running such a business, you know, you get all the opinions, you can bring in the coaches, you can bring in all the support, but what's your process like when it comes to like figuring out, okay, what's best for the company? What's best for us to move forward? How do you get to that place of center and execute from there?
So we have shareholders, like I said, and then we do have a 5-person board that, you know, big decisions we roll by them and discuss them and brainstorm there. Aaron and I, we're together every day, you know, brainstorming, and the people in the factory are part of our family too. So a lot of times, a lot of ideas will come straight from those guys. We're on the floor all day, every day. So there's nothing that really gets by without us being there and a part of it. And it's nice. I worked in the factory, Aaron worked in the factory. We know how it's done. So we know when they have a problem or they have an idea, it comes from a good place.
And also, you know, Passover is circled on the calendar every year. We kind of work backwards from there. The chances are they're not going to cancel Passover anytime soon. Yeah. And that's our anchor. And from there, we try to plan production, everything backwards, and then cycle back around that way. So that really sets our focus with that date on the calendar.
As far as like brainstorming and trying to come up with new things, we did actually a very interesting, we both kind of student taught a class at Babson College, an entrepreneurial course at Babson, and the kids broke up into groups, and basically they said, this is a 90-year-old matzah company called Moses's Matzah, and this is what they're doing now, and how are you going to take them, you know, into the next 90 years, and how are you going to take this old brand with brand equity and reinvent it? So we've done that twice, and you get great feedback. You get a new point of
view. What's come from that? I'm curious to know.
We just did one, so we're looking through.
We got an intern.
Yeah, yeah. we got on your show. Was one of
right.
our things. Right?
Our intern got us on your show.
Yeah, this podcast.
Look at that.
A lot of it is crossover appeal. Taking matzah as thinking of it as more of just a large cracker as a blank palette for either cooking or for using some different ethnic cuisine in different cultures, and introducing it there. That was a very, very neat one. So we're trying to just listen. We don't want to change it into a 2x2 cracker and then it's a cracker. We want to use this 7x7 cracker and turn it into the next pita bread bagel. The bagel was an ethnic Jewish food until it wasn't.
You passed us like we were standing still.
Same thing with the pita bread. Pita bread was, you know, very ethnic. No one would have pita bread. Now pita chips are everywhere.
Right. I love that. So pivoting to like just in general for like a Pesach, Passover, what's Passover mean to you guys? What's the holiday? How's it resonate to you? How's it land for you? And what would I say? Also, what's the lesson that you would say you take away from the story of Passover?
For me, it's different, right? Because we have this on our calendar every year. It changes, right? And we have it on the calendar since September, and we're going towards a purpose of that day. So for me, it's almost like an end. I have this big beard right now. I'm shaving my beard when Passover time comes. it's a lot of hard work, and then it just turns into, honestly, for me, to a day of a couple of days of family, right? And my family comes from different areas of the country, mostly in the Northeast. We usually come to my house. That's my holiday. And it's everyone getting together and just appreciating each other and appreciating the time we have. Because that is my week. That is my week off. Mm-hmm. So it really is a true shutdown. And for me, it's all about family.
And for us last year, you know, we weren't shut down for that pandemic. And we had this little website and we were getting orders. We were here packing boxes ourselves all night long to, you know, everyone buying one of this and two of this and one of this. We weren't set up for that at all. We didn't want to disappoint any customers. So we had friends and relatives. Everyone was coming here trying to, you know, make packages to send out to people direct that couldn't get to the stores and, you know, from the pandemic.
So yes, wow. We shut down the night before Passover, and we did about, I don't know, 20 times more online sales than we had in years past. It was not our forte. So, but we had four or five of us just making these boxes, and it was great that we could get it out to everyone. But it was nice to shut down when the holiday comes. So it really is. It is a true disconnect. Turn everything off and spend time with family and appreciate the family.
And for me, you know, in my Seder, we use the Haggadahs that we had at my grandfather's house. So when I open up that Haggadah, I use the one that he would, you know, run the Seder in. And that means the most to me. When I open that up, it's all marked up and, you know, go to page 12 and, you know, and
skip that.
Yeah, skip that. You know. So that's what I think about it the most, is when I open up his Haggadah that I keep for myself.
That's beautiful. That's it. It's all, I mean, it definitely, it comes out from you guys, you know, tradition and family is our most important values to you guys. And it comes through, through the product that you guys create. So that's really awesome. To wrap it all up, I just two questions. So what's the dream for Shreitz Matzah? And I'll start off with that.
You know, I mean, for me, honestly, it is for if, when you have your Seder table, it's that Shreitz Matzah is on your table for your Seder, right? We want to be a part of your home, be a part of that tradition, and be there with you for the holiday. And then throughout the year, we wanted just people to think of matzah really honestly as something that you want to eat, not because you have to, because you enjoy it, because there's 11 sheets in there and it's a great alternative to a bread or to a bagel. And it's very cost effective, you know, for an 11-ounce box, you're talking $4.
But you can't eat a whole box at one time.
right.
If you do, you'll be home for the rest of the week.
The dream is to have a good quality product that is a staple in everyone's Passover home and then translates outside of Jewish culture during the year.
And mine would be to keep it a niche business, keep it relevant, and keep the generations going, both from the inside the family and to the family of generations of families that have eaten our product. I think that'd be, you know, great. I really like when someone writes in that, you know, they've been a 30-year customer and they just had a great memory. And that hits home the most for me. Mm.
And to end off the Great Day podcast with you guys, what is a great day for you?
No breakdowns in the factory.
That's pretty much it. A smooth day, no trouble. And yeah, just smooth production day. And no negative feedback from anyone and a bunch of complimentary emails.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much for taking the time today, sharing the history of Shreitz Matzah, what goes into it, and the incredible tradition that you guys have been carrying throughout the years. So thank you, and happy Passover.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on this podcast.
Happy Passover.
Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast episode with Aaron Gross and Aaron Yagoda. Thank you, Shreitz Matzos, for supporting this podcast. And of course, check out ShreitzMatzos.com. Use the code MayorK for 10% off your order. And now is the best time because Pesach is around the corner, so jump on that ASAP. Use the code. They've got all types of products as well, beyond just matzos. And all their products are fresh, quality. It's good stuff. And they're good people behind the family-owned business. So you know it's coming from a good place. So thank you so much again, Shreitz Matzos. Thank you for tuning in, you all, for listening. And of course, subscribe to the podcast, wherever podcasts can be found. The Great Day Podcast, elevating your day, bringing some insight and motivation to making your day that much more greater. Until next time, happy Pesach, happy Passover, stay positive, be happy. I'm Mayor K, and have a great day.